Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up, yeah. All the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Math and music intersecting in Spinal Tap. Who remembers that? And it's our family meeting on laughter on the Brian Lehrer Show today. Now laughter and politics with Liz Winstead, co-creator of The Daily Show, creator of a current campaign called Lady Parts Justice, which uses humor to draw attention to the issue of abortion rights, and comedian Hari Kondabolu, who you may have seen on Letterman, Jimmy Kimmel, Comedy Central, heard on Terry Gross recently, great conversation, and much more. He has a new album called Waiting for 2042. That's the year in which whites are projected to no longer be a population majority in the United States. Boy, there's a funny premise for a comedy album. Hi, Hari.
I can hear the phone calls coming in already.
Hi, Liz.
Hi.
The mix of anger and anxiety. And then you have to make them laugh. So, Liz, to the same point, humor in pursuit of abortion rights. Can you be funny about abortion rights?
Why not? I mean, humor, you can be funny about anything if it's done right. And I often feel like we say over and over again, how do you pick your targets when you're talking about sensitive issues? And with abortion rights, for me especially, I feel like the woman is constantly put on trial when she's wanting to access reproductive health care. And so if you don't make fun of the topic, you make fun of the players who are trying to prevent simple things going on. And there are a lot of funny players who are anti-science, which I find hilarious. Yeah, you can make it funny.
And so, for example, from one video on Lady Parts Justice, Sarah Silverman in conversation with Jesus Christ.
So anyway, I'm sitting there, and I get a little heavy, and I'm like, Jesus, when does life begin?
At 40.
What?
And he was like,
but fertilized eggs aren't people. People are people.
And I was like, thank you.
But people who believe fertilized eggs are people too. And you have to love them. You're not better than them.
And I was like, you're right. Thanks, Jesus.
Ha ha ha. So can that accomplish something politically, you hope, that earnest pleas about reproductive rights and fertilized eggs and implantation and all that stuff cannot?
I think it can. I think that when you point out the hypocrisy that's going on in every single state legislature around the country about the laws, whether it's fertilized eggs or people or life begins at conception or erection or whatever it is they've decided, people know and they start thinking, wait a minute, why did and when did my medical care all of a sudden become a political issue? Because a lot of people aren't aware of it because these things happen in the dead of night. And there are little silent things that go on. And so we're going to make local politics sexy while talking about reproductive health care.
And so another example, as Texas was reducing the availability of abortions in the dead of night in the state legislature, you gathered some comedians and others here in New York to make some jokes and fundraise, led by a giant stuffed vulva.
Yes.
You can laugh at a giant stuffed vulva.
Well, I think when every time you do a telethon, there is that sexy person that comes out and gives you the updates on the pledges. We decided to have it be a giant stuffed vulva. Why wouldn't you?
Of course, if a guy ever came out on stage with a giant stuffed vulva. So context matters and things like that.
I think maybe.
And you remind me of the old Monty Python routine we sampled from them in another context earlier in the show. Every sperm is sacred. You know that song?
Yes, I sure do. Every sperm is good.
Which makes fun of the other side too. So listeners, what's your favorite example of political humor? Can you laugh at jokes that make fun of your politics rather than the other side? What political humor do you find unfunny? Do you think political humor can help bring political change? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692 for Liz Winstead and Hari Kondabolu. So, Hari, as I said, your new album is called Waiting for 2042.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's the year in which whites are projected to no longer be a population majority in the United States, then we'll have no majority in the United States. which sounds like a serious premise for a comedy album, especially if you're a white person, would you say?
Right. I mean, the whole thing is strange to me because still in that situation, 49% of the population will still be white, which again is a made-up term. It's all this race is constructed. It's not real to begin with. But like if we're going to use race, it's still 49% of whites are the largest minority by far still. But the thing is that's assuming that all white people are the same and have the same beliefs and have the same politics and that they're afraid of this 51%, which is apparently exactly the same, which it isn't. So, I mean, the fact that the media keeps talking about those numbers seems ridiculous to me. And how many times have I turned on CNN, which is my mistake to begin with, and heard, that number, like, this is this year. Like, why is this news? Why are we forcing this to be news? And why are we worried about the nation's changing, the culture's changing? That's how nations and cultures work.
Well, I think what's so hilarious, too, is when people talk about post-racial America, post-racial society, of the fact that there is one iota of fear about the statistic
right.
says you know that there has been some bad stuff going down, and you sit there and say there isn't, but then why would you be afraid? If it was all hunky-dory, why would anybody be afraid?
Right.
I want people to hear part of a bit you did on Letterman. This gets at ethnic stereotyping and I guess a little of the new world that we'll be living in after 2042, or really, this is just not news to a New York audience.
Right.
we live in such a diverse city as it is with no majority for years and years already, and I don't think anybody feels like some big amorphous other is coming after them. But Harry Condabal,
well, I've been in cabs with drivers who might disagree with that, but fair enough. Yeah.
So the story is that he is you want to set this up? We're just going to play about a 20-second clip of this.
Sure. I was flying home from a tour, landed at LaGuardia Airport, and I grew up in Queens. My father was picking me up at the airport, and a white lady ran in front of me and got into the back of our car, which was
– of the family car.
Of the family car, which is shocking. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Look, I'm sorry, but I got here first. Maybe you should walk a little faster. At this point, it becomes clear that she thinks she's in a cab and my father is a cab driver. Because apparently she's so racist, she looks at the color of the driver before looking at the color of the car.
True story, or
true
did you
story.
Make that up?
That was a true story, and I think I made up the part about her running after. She actually just opened the door, was embarrassed, and walked away. No apology. but yeah, I mean that's it's a lighter story. It's a funny story, but it does when these things happen, it kind of reminds me, oh, this is why I was chosen to be a stand-up comedian. I was chosen to do this. There's no way that just happens to people regularly, things like that.
Listeners, what is your favorite political humor? 212-433-WNYC. Do you think political humor can help bring political change? 212-433-9692. Can you laugh at jokes that make fun of your politics rather than the other side's? 212-433-9692. Joan in the East Village, you're on the air. Hi, Joan.
Oh, hi. Yes, I want to answer this question about whether I can laugh at things that ridicule my sacred cows. Absolutely. And I've always said that the absolute test of really good humor is if it attacks something you care about and you still find it funny. Mm. You may then say, well, I don't agree with that. But if it made you laugh, it was really good. And I gave the screener an example from Rush Limbaugh. I have a few examples, but Rush Limbaugh once was complaining about how, these liberals, they're always complaining about women and blacks always have it the hardest, and if there's unemployment, it's always higher among women and blacks, blah, blah, blah. He's going on about that. And then he said, one day you'll see a headline saying, nuclear weapon wipes out New York, women and blacks hardest hit. And I had to admit that was funny. It made me laugh, even though I don't appreciate the sentiment behind it, what he was trying to say with it.
Joan, thank you very much. Liz, can you, as a, out progressive comedian?
Yeah, because first of all, there was very few progressives that are actually holding office. Excuse me. So I think you're not doing your job as a social critic if you're not taking on – I'm not in this business to promote – the president or to do anything else. And I have a lot of issues with the president, with Hillary Clinton, with when you're progressive, if you're not looking at those people and shining a lens on
right.
all of it, then you're not doing your job.
But you called yourself a social critic just there. So as you were there at the creation of The Daily Show, for example, and you were so much at the creation that Jon Stewart wasn't even the host yet,
right.
was the concept from the start to make political points or social criticism through comedy rather than just use the news as a vehicle to be funny?
I think the part of the show excuse me. I think the biggest part for us was not only to look at politicians and whoever. My philosophy has always been, if you've been given the gift of power and you use it stupidly or for evil, then you'll be the target. But it was also, The Daily Show was a place where we were looking at the media as a lens. And it was the first time that we looked just like the media, but then took on their foibles and their inaccuracies mm-hmm. and who they are as a character in this whole landscape of disinformation.
Which The Daily Show does to this day. And I think I've heard Jon Stewart walk that line very carefully. And when people start calling him too much of a do-gooder or an entertainer with a cause, he tends to fall back on, hey, I'm just a comedian, man. You know, a Lenny Bruce or a George Carlin might have been much more out about their political agendas, or maybe they just had more explicit political agendas, or maybe that's not your impression of what Jon is doing. But how do you see The Daily Show today on that spectrum?
I think The Daily Show, as Jon says, which is true, it's on Comedy Central and it's a comedy show first. I mean, I think that that's just the way it is. And I think that it is not Jon Stewart's fault, nor is it the right of or is it the fault of any writer to choose what the funniest things are? And it just so happens that the law of averages of where you can mine comedically the screw-ups have landed a lot in the camp of the extreme right wing. You know, if the left screws up or if Democrats screw up, sometimes it's like it's very heady. And that part is really hard to deal with comedically. It's like, oh, how are we going to manipulate the negotiation on the healthcare reform law? And it's like, oh my God, really? Like, that's a hard thing to do.
Well, they're going after a very fundamental thing.
That's
which
right.
That really conservative folks don't believe that time is linear.
Yeah.
And that anything
don't
at any point in history.
Don't believe that time is linear. What
right.
does that mean?
Meaning that, like, they think that, oh, anything that was applicable in the 40s and 50s and whatever they thought was relevant then is relevant now. It's like, yeah, that's weird that you still live in the past today.
Well, you know, and like, I'll never forget watching a debate with, you know, the presidential candidates, 10 people on stage. Chris Matthews is moderating it. And Chris Matthews says, how many of you believe in evolution? And 3 out of 10 raise their hand. And at that point, you're like, that is a scientific fact. So the 7 of you still standing there should have been excused. Like, they should have been excused and said, thank you for playing. You can't come back. You can't lead the free world and not believe in evolution.
And to some people, that was a laugh line when Chris Matthews
yes.
had that response. Salam in Bayshore. You're on WNYC. Good morning, Salam.
Good morning, Brian, and good morning, everybody. I think that when the Jon Stewart, or rather when The Daily Show was created, it was hilarious. It still is. And then when the Colbert Report came out, you know, I always found The Daily Show lens hilarious. But then the Colbert Report was coming out with a conservative angle, and I didn't know if that would be funny. But as a moderate, it was hilarious.
But, you know, it's a fake conservative angle.
Oh, yes, yeah, yeah. The lens that it looks through is different from The Daily Show. But it taught us that if you can look at these issues in so many different ways and laugh about it, it's amazing. So for my own personal story, I'm a practicing Muslim, and there's so many Muslim jokes out there. But if it's tastefully done, I will laugh at it. And as an amateur comic, you know, I've seen a lot out there. And if you can objectively look at your own views, your own religions, your own issues, and you can laugh about it, I think you're in a much better place than people who get offended.
Salam, thank you very much. Harry, what are you thinking?
I mean, I think context is, of course, really important, right? Like, do you actually own the thing that you're saying? And is that a, you know, there's a difference. And Chappelle, you know, kind of is the biggest person who says this, like being laughed at versus being laughed with. And, you know, when he talks about leaving the Chappelle show, he felt like people were laughing at the things he was talking about, not with. It wasn't a shared, like the sensibilities weren't shared. And so that's really important. So I think the thing I take from that is, yeah, I think it depends on who says it and how they say it and the people in the room. Are they laughing at you or do they get the joke?
That's right.
So here's another classic clip, I think, that exemplifies that a little bit. Richard Pryor, pretty edgy as he declares the N-word dead.
You know, because we never was no niggas. That's a word that's used to describe our own wretchedness. And we perpetuate it now because it's dead. That word's dead. We men and women, we come from the first people on the earth. The first people on the earth were black people. Because anthropologists, white anthropologists. So the white people go, that could be true, you know. Yeah, Dr. Leakey and them found people remains 5 million years ago in Africa. You know them didn't speak French. So black people, we the first people had thought, right? We's the first one to say, where the f*** am I? And how do you get to Detroit?
So that is both deadly serious, and yet you hear people cracking up and cracking up, Liz.
Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, comedy is a powerful thing. And when you can talk about something as real as that and make it funny, that's why Richard Pryor is Richard Pryor.
It's also the kind of the politics of joy. Like, joy is a very political thing, because if that audience does not laugh, it sounds different to us, doesn't
That's
it?
Right.
Like, and the fact that people were so into it, it kind of like, oh, what Richard Pryor is saying is interesting and relevant. I mean, I've had shows where, like, you'll have half the crowd not laughing and the other half are laughing hysterically. And for the people who aren't laughing, who might disagree with my point of view, they have to acknowledge someone thinks it's funny. Because if there was a room full of people that didn't find it funny, I mean, that's when the crowd gangs up, like, what is this? This is awful. Well, half the people are laughing, so there must be something to this person, he's saying.
And that's the thing where I'm always really careful. If there's someone I particularly don't find funny, I never say that person's not funny.
Right.
I say they're not funny to me.
Right.
Because there's people who fill up Madison Square Garden that I've never laughed at once, but people love them. And, like,
right.
You can't deny that fact.
And you can also appreciate, like, they're making themselves vulnerable by putting themselves on stage. That's what we do all the time.
That's
each
right.
of us, regardless of level, is making ourselves vulnerable when we go on stage.
Have you worked in other countries, Hari? Have you worked in India?
I did. I did a tour of India, which Rand Paul keeps mentioning. Strangely.
Really?
Yeah.
Very what?
Strange. It was funded by the State Department. It was the calls are going to come in now, Ryan. This is it. It was called Make Chai Not War. I didn't name it. It was my friends Rajiv Satyal and Azhar Usman who did. And we went to 7 cities. Usually they bring jazz and things like that, but they wanted people to actually attend the program, so they brought comedy. And it was incredible.
You find the sense of humor is different?
It varies place to place, city to city, just like this country. And, you know, like, I had a different reaction in Mumbai and Kolkata, certainly, versus, like, say, Patna, which is a much smaller city, right, where English isn't as widely spoken. So, I mean, it varies from place to place. And I will say that some people found me very funny and some people did not understand. And also the context of here, often I talk as an outsider who's also an insider. And in India, I'm an American, only an American. So it's very bizarre.
Have you developed any Modi jokes yet?
Not yet. I mean, the stuff I've tweeted about Modi has mostly been anger and vitriol. So it hasn't led to much. I think the one thing I did say, which won't be funny, but I'll say it anyway, is that I prefer saffron in my wardrobe and not in my politics. So that's for the 4 people who get that.
Comedian Hari Kondabolu, who you may have seen on Letterman, Jimmy Kimmel, Comedy Central, heard on Terry Gross recently, has a new album called Waiting for 2042. And Liz Winstead, co-creator of The Daily Show, creator of a current campaign called Lady Parts Justice, which uses humor to draw attention to the issue of abortion rights, at ladypartsjustice.com. Thank you both for contributing to our family meeting on laughter on
Thank
the Brian Lehrer Show.
Thank you very much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Our family meeting continues. Up next, John Hodgman will judge your jokes.
Return my favor. Got me crying now.